If you're listening to this podcast, there's a really high chance that you are also interested in cookbooks. So I wanted to let you guys know that my cookbook, Elevated Everyday Paleo, is officially out wherever you get your books from. It's a collection of recipes that I believe make everyday cooking just a bit more special, and I hope it reminds you that there's art in so many little moments of life. You can grab it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your local bookseller. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Manual Mode. I'm Mariah Sautel. Today is a very special episode. I'm talking with my friend Rachel Simons, an Aussie mom of two running a tahini empire here in New York City. After 15 years as a media lawyer, Rachel turned her lifelong passion for food into Seed and Mill, the tahini brand you've probably heard me rave about because it's just that good. Rachel is a positive ray of sunshine, and I can't wait to hear her wonderful accent talk us through the story of starting and running a thriving food brand. So, Rachel, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for taking the time today. I know that you had quite a different career before running Seed and Mill. So can you take me back to your decision to become a lawyer and what your career was like back then, and then what it's been like switching from that to running your own company?
Yeah, thanks, Mariah. It's lovely to be on the podcast, and I'm cringing at my Aussie accent. So,
no, it's great. I'm so excited about it.
Let me know if I'm using words or phrases that you don't understand. I've been in the US for 7 years, and people still often kind of look at me a little bit confused when I'll say something that I think makes perfect sense in my English. And then you realize that English in Australia and English in America and English in Britain is, you know, there's lots of different versions. But anyway, I'll go back to the story of moving here. So I moved to the US from Australia 7 years ago, and I had worked as a lawyer in Australia. And the question as to why did I become a lawyer, I think it's probably there's no real reason to that. I think my dad had been a lawyer, so I'd grown up in a household watching him and his career and understanding what he did, and I think naturally there was just some familiarity to that career path, so I just went into something similar. And in many ways I think I continued with my career, and what I loved about that part of my life wasn't so much the law. I wasn't passionate about legal process or legal principles. Honestly, when I reflect back on that period of my life, what I really loved were the industries that I was working in. And I started at a law firm, but I very quickly moved in-house, and I was working for Australia's biggest, or one of Australia's biggest media companies. And I just loved learning about the business that I was working in. It was nice that I could apply legal skills there, but I just honestly, I like the journalists, I like the photographers, I like the sub editors. It's funny that I really thrived there because it fulfilled part of my creative instincts without me even realizing it. There I was in the legal team, but there was something still very fulfilling for me there.
So when you decided to start Seed and Mill, what was that process like?
It was not really a strategic process, if that makes sense. And it's mm-hmm. funny, I really more fell into Seed and Mill. And I think for a lot of entrepreneurs who start businesses, they have a mission and a goal, and they have a problem that they want to solve, or there's a lot more perhaps organization and thought. For me, Seed and Mill was really almost just a coincidence that kept growing and growing beyond our expectations. So I'll take a back step. So I arrived in the US in 2014. I had decided my two kids needed to be adjusted into a new school. I'd been working as a lawyer for a long time. I wanted a break. And I wasn't working for a little while. And meanwhile, I was just meeting new people in the city and making new friends. And one of the new friends that I'd made was my co-founder of Cedar Mill, Lisa, one of my co-founders. And she had kids at the same school. And we were just friends. She was from another part of the world. She grew up in South Africa and then moved to Israel as a teenager. And we really connected over travel and being a new person in a new city and kids the same age. But most importantly, we both loved food. So we would meet, we'd chat about food, we'd talk about our favorite restaurants, what we like to cook. And I'd host her and she'd host me. And then one day she told me about this idea to start Cedar Mill. And I thought, oh, that's a great idea. I'm trying to remember the sequence of events. She was saying to me, you should also start a food business. You'd be great in a food business. And I said, yeah, that'd be great. I just don't know what it would look like. I don't know what that would be. I think at the time I was also contemplating something else around coaching, and I was studying at NYU. And she looked at me and she's like, why are you doing that? You're a food person. You should be in the food industry. And, you know, one thing led to another, and she said, why don't we start this business together? And at the time, Cedar Mill was just a tiny little store in Chelsea Market. We just wanted to present food products that were familiar to both of us from travel and youth, and we loved. And we thought, oh, no one's really doing or selling these types of products in a more mindful way. They're not selling clean products, then no one's really putting any effort into flavor and branding and community and education. And it started as this tiny little venture, and I can talk about this in a second, but it just grew and grew, and we learned on the job. And nearly 6 years on, it's still changing as a business. It's still evolving and changing every month.
I love that. So talking a bit about having a co-founder, it's interesting to me the dynamic of having a co-founder versus someone who's starting a business on their own. Can you speak to maybe how it was helpful to have a co-founder? Because I imagine that there's some loneliness in entrepreneurship either way, but I bet that must be really helpful to have kind of someone who's going through it with you, who really understands the challenges of all of that. Was that your experience?
Yeah, so also to mention, there was three co-founders of Cedar Mill. So we also started the business with Monica, and the three of us again had, you know, I'd met Lisa, Lisa had met Monica, the three of us got together and started the business. It's a whole story and podcast in itself, the question of co-founders. I think it's very complicated. I will be really honest with you and the audience listening to this, that it was not easy going all of the time. I think any relationship, whether it's your marriage, your, you know, parent relationship, business relationship, friendships, that it takes a lot of work and a lot of human emotion, kind of EQ, to understand someone else's work style, what motivates them, what pushes their buttons, what they're sensitive to, how they feel around feedback. So it was not easy all the time. But I will say that I think I'm now running Cedar Mill on my own. So Monica actually moved to the Netherlands and Lisa stepped away from the day-to-day operations. So now I am back to running the business entirely on my own. And I think it is a bit lonely. If I had my choice, if I was starting something new or I was talking to another founder about starting a venture, I think I would always want partners. That's me. I like to collaborate. I like to brainstorm and share ideas and seek feedback. So that's my innate personality. But again, in full transparency, that has a whole set of problems. And there's no perfect solution. You just have to be, I think the most important thing is being very self-aware around what it means to interact and work with others. And to be on a constant mission to learn and grow and just be a compassionate, understanding human, colleague, human, co-worker, whatever you're going to say, it all just takes effort.
Yeah, people are so complex and there's so many ups and downs of working with them. So I'd imagine that all makes perfect sense to me, that there would be amazing things, but also challenges with everyone maybe having different visions or that just all makes perfect sense to me. So going back, you mentioned that there was a lot of growth in Seed & Mill. Can you talk to me about that process and kind of like growth in the early days and then just what it's been like throughout the past few years for you?
Yeah, so the growth in the early days was so far beyond our expectations. I mean, as I said, we really only wanted to open a cute little kiosk and talk to people who were visiting Chelsea Market, which for those people listening to the podcast is a marketplace in New York City, and it's full of tourists. I think pre-pandemic there were around 30,000 people a day in the market. It's not quite back to that yet, but so it was full of people, and all we did was chat to people all day and explain what tahini is, explain what halva is, where it comes from, why you'd eat it, what the history of the words mean, how healthy it is. And I guess through all of that education and excitement about our products, we ended up attracting a lot of press and we attracted a lot of wholesale buyers. So we had, in the very first 6 months of our business, we were inundated with wholesale requests. And that was initially super exciting because it was validating that we were selling something that people liked and were interested in, and there was a category and we were proving our concept. But again, in full transparency, we were not experienced entrepreneurs. I had just changed careers. I was learning on the job. We didn't go into Seed & Mill with this five-year plan. We weren't funded. And so as each opportunity came to us, you know, now in hindsight, I look back and I wish we hadn't done a lot of things that we did do, but we were just excited that people liked what we were doing. So every time somebody came to us, we would say, yeah, sure, we can do that. Yeah, sure, we can wholesale our jars to you. Meanwhile, we had no idea even what wholesale strategy looked like. We didn't know what a UPC code was, even, you know, the little barcode that you need to put on packaging and how to create it. I mean, every single step in growing a sales channel in it. So there's different channels. There's wholesale, there's D2C, there's food service, there's a retail, and each of those worlds are just entirely different. And we just dove straight in, made a gazillion mistakes. I think it's good to be honest about all those mistakes and just try to not keep repeating them. So now, you know, 5 years on, I think now we're far more judicious and careful around opportunities that come to us. And I've learned to say, well, that sounds like a wonderful opportunity, but what will it really cost us to pursue that? What's the effort involved? And for me, I just love to do everything, and I'm excited to learn, and I'm excited to meet new people, and everything feels very, even 5 years on, I'm still always excited to do something new, but I need other people now to hold me back.
So going back for a minute to you being a lawyer, I'm a big believer that our past careers as entrepreneurs especially are often preparing us for the skills we need in our next careers, even if they're in totally different industries. So what are some things that you took from being a lawyer that have been helpful for you as you've run Seed & Mill?
I mean, the basic fundamentals of a business require structure, organization, hard work. I think I have all of those things. I'm very, I think a lot of people would probably describe me as a bit of a perfectionist, which is, you know, for good and for bad, but I have very high standards. I'm very hard on myself, probably not hard on others, but very tough on myself around meeting my own expectations. So that that can be tough. I think I was listening to one of your earlier podcasts from last week, Mariah, and I think you'd said something like you were having a bit of imposter syndrome. And I, you know, that's a feeling that I know very, very well. And I think, you know, when you go from a career in something, I had 18, it's actually 18 years that I'd been working as a lawyer. So after a while, I felt really accomplished and I knew what I was doing and I knew how to do my job. And then you go into something new and I'm like, oh my God, I have no idea what I'm doing, no right to be here. But anyway, I've gone off on a segue. I think back to the prior career, probably the other thing I really took away from that chapter of my life is I was working for media companies, but actually my specialization was HR, human resources, industrial relations, and I used to negotiate large enterprise agreements with unions and deal with workplace conflict and litigation around when people lose their jobs, et cetera. And I think I really acquired a very deep understanding of what people look for at work, how to manage human relationships, why people need to feel valued, well paid. And one of the things I'm really proud of at Cedar Mill is that, you know, we've always attracted such great people to the business. I've always been really proud of treating them well, paying them as well as I can. And just understanding that whether it's a small team or a large team, no one can run a business. I mean, I couldn't run my business alone, and every single person is so important to getting to achieving what we want to achieve. And yeah, I'm really proud that I understand how to keep those people motivated.
That's great. Talking more about people, can you take me through, and maybe having co-founders kind of help with this, but kind of the early days of hiring, because it can be really scary to make your first hires.
Oh yeah, another whole podcast in itself. Yeah. But yeah, hiring is so hard, but I've learned that nothing matters more when you're hiring people, and I say this with such strong conviction, nothing matters more than culture fit. And I used to hear that people used to say, "Oh, hire for culture and kind of characteristics, not skills." And people used to say to me, "Hire slow and fire fast," and all these cliches, they don't really make sense till you've really lived through that experience and you've worked. I mean, there's been a couple of people that I think were not great culture fit people. They did the in our journey, you know, and they served a different purpose. But I think that when you're hiring people, all I now look for is attitude. Does this person have a curiosity? Are they eager to learn? Do they have high standards on, you know, meeting their own expectations? Are they team players? Are they just happy people to, you know, we're not always happy, but is this somebody that I want to come to work with and smile at in the morning? Do I want to grab them a coffee in the morning? Do I want to accept when they offer to grab me a coffee in the morning? Like all of that matters so much in terms of my happiness at work and just the team's success. It's great when you find somebody with incredible experience and skills, but if they aren't the right human and the right, if they don't have the right personality for the dynamic of the team, it's just never, never, never. You can try your best, but I fundamentally don't think those sorts of hiring opportunities are ever going to work.
Yeah, culture fit is everything. Talking a little more about culture, can you talk about some of the brand collaborations that you've done with other kind of New York-based small businesses and kind of the value that you found in being connected with the small business world?
Yeah, I love that question. I mean, obviously people are listening to this, but Mariah and I are actually looking at each other. And like the minute she asked that question, my face lit up. And you can probably hear in my voice. I mean, the way that Cedar Mill has built a community of friends, and I really say friends, they're not partners, they're not influencers or collaborators. I think of all of them as my friends. And that's been the most joyous part of my personal experience working at Cedar Mill. It's what motivates me more than almost anything else. But looking at it also from a business point of view, it's been very important because it's really validated our product and our brand. It's enabled us to help educate and create knowledge around what it is that we sell. And I mean, it's just we're all in this together, and particularly small businesses, they're usually underfunded, or most of the small business collaborations we've done have been with other small businesses that don't have deep pockets, they don't have large investors, they can't afford huge ad campaigns, or you know, all of the costs of building a brand. If you don't have the money, you need to find other ways to build your brand. And being able to do it in alongside a whole lot of other small businesses that are complementary, we're all helping each other in a really cost efficient way. But it's just fun. I mean, I've learned from all of our collaborators. I've learned info from. They often call me for advice, and it's a real community that has. Cedarmill wouldn't be what it is today without all of those brand collaborators, including you, actually, Mariah. You know, it's been. I remember when you and I first met, I think you reached out on Instagram, or we were talking on Instagram, and I was excited because your name actually is the name of my high school. Like, I went to a high school called Mariah, and I was so excited to chat to you, and you brought me back to something of my home and my childhood, and that was just a tiny spark of connection. And we've, you know, got to know each other better over the last few years, and that makes me happy every time I see something that you've posted on Instagram. I'm excited to see what you're doing and how your business is changing.
Yeah, it's been really fun for me, especially since moving to New York, to really see just how much of a small business community there is here and how many great brands there are. And I think maybe people who haven't really been to New York City or don't live here maybe think that it's a lot of just like big corporations, but it really has just the most special group of like farmers and small businesses and creators. And it's been really fun to meet people like you and all the other people like you with the small businesses here. So I've enjoyed that. So this is a bit of a non sequitur, but do you have a favorite product at Cedarmill?
Yeah, I love our ice cream. I know that's not so helpful for people who aren't in New York and might want to try our products because it's only available in New York, but I love ice cream personally, and I was really excited that we could take something that no one would have ever thought to combine with tahini. When we tell people that we sell tahini soft serve, they look at me with this baffled look of like, really? You're going to put tahini in an ice cream? But that was one of our, I think we've sold it since the day we opened, and it was fun for me to be able to conceive of the product. And I eat it all the time, and we've also changed the recipe. We've worked with other collaborators on that. In fact, now we're making it in such large volumes we couldn't really make it ourselves. So we've partnered with a vegan restaurant down in Tribeca called Lekker Burger, and they now make the base for us. But even just collaborating with them has been fun, and everything just ties back to community for me. No matter what question you ask about the business, when I dig into all of it, it all just circles back to the people and the support network and the joy that we all take in eating and talking about the food and the way it just builds relationships.
So is there anything on the horizon for you in Cedarmill that you can tell us about?
Yeah, we're really trying to innovate on some of the formats. So we currently sell our tahini and halva in kind of large-ish jars, or the halva is in a large-ish box. I'm working really hard to try to find solutions to producing it in smaller bite-sized pieces, or, you know, small little sachets for the tahini that are a little bit more transportable and just easy to sort of take out and about. And we're also really hoping to innovate on flavor. So tahini currently in our lineup is in a regular organic, and we already have a za'atar tahini, and I'm hoping to introduce some more sweet tahini, a salted caramel tahinis, hopefully in our future. which are all really unusual flavors for tahini. And that's what makes it fun for me to kind of combine old and new and to surprise people with like, oh, I wouldn't have thought that would go with tahini, but wow, that's great. I can use that for something that I would have never thought to use it for.
All of those sound amazing and I can't wait to try them. So I will be there. Yeah. Now, I usually ask people at the end what their favorite thing is to cook, but I'd love to know if you can tell us what your favorite thing to cook with tahini is.
Oh, my goodness. I was going to say I'd listened to some of your other podcasts, so I knew you might ask that question, and I was going to say to you, oh, I love to cook. My favorite thing to bake is apple tart tartan, and I was thinking of this whole story of apple, why that's important to me. But
well, let's talk about that then.
I mean, it's in a funny way, again, I'll be honest, like tahini, I've cooked and baked with it for 5-6 years. And so sometimes it is nice not to have that in every single thing I make. Mm-hmm. And I love to bake. And apple tart tartan for me is probably the most favorite thing I love to bake, only because it's just such a simple set of ingredients. It's really just apple and sugar and pastry. And I love that. Kind of the surprise of like, wow, such simplicity can also be so sophisticated and so elegant. And I also love the fact that, you know, the recipe was sort of created through a bit of a mistake where someone had the history of that particular recipe, you can look it up, but it started because someone had accidentally kind of messed up with their recipe and the original creator just flipped the whole thing upside down and presented it in reverse. So there's something kind of really metaphorical for me about that particular dish. I have made it with tahini caramel, actually. I'll be honest, I once tried to see if I could make an apple tart tartan by adding tahini to the caramel, and it worked. It definitely works. But sometimes I like to just go back to the pure, original, simple recipes and just keep it simple.
That sounds great. And I'm going to have to look all that up and make it now because I've never made it, but you've sold me. I love that. Well, Rachel, this was amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time. I will have links to Seed and Mill and everything in the show notes and the website so everyone can find it. Hopefully they've tried it because I've been talking about it for a few years. But if anyone's new, please check it out. And thank you so much. This was so great. And I loved getting to hear more of your story.
Thanks for having me, Mariah. I loved it too.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Manual Mode. As always, you can find links to our guest on the show notes on mariahbrook.com. And we will be back next week with yet another great guest. In the meantime, please rate, review, subscribe, and I will see you back same time, same place next week.